All rise, the Court of Appeals Division 1 is now in session.
Be seated. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Arizona Court of Appeals for Division 1. We're glad to have you here. We welcome anybody who is viewing us at home or remotely on the video as well. I am Judge Jacobs. To my right is Judge Perkins. To my left is Judge Weinzweig. And we are here for oral argument in the appeal of Mr. Hoon Koo versus the City of Scottsdale. As you may know, we do record and live stream these proceedings, so please state your name for the record and the name of the party you represent so that shows up on that record for everyone. You have a maximum of 20 minutes per side, although you are not required to use all of your time. We ask you to keep track of and mind your own time using the indicated clock in front of you there to make sure if you need to reserve as the appellant, you have that. Please keep in mind that we have read the briefing. We have studied the record. We have discussed this case this morning. And so we are aware of the record and the arguments in it. And on that basis, please, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, I'm Timothy Lasota on behalf of the appellant, Hoon Koo. And I'd like to reserve about 5 minutes for rebuttal. I don't know if it's my job to just stop talking at 5 minutes, but I would like to note that at the outset. So I'd just like to start off by mentioning, I think, you know, if we had to kind of teach someone, we're trying to tell someone, what is a variance for? I think this case might be the poster child for why the laws on variances exist. They obviously allow someone some exception from the zoning code. Here we have a property, 15,700 square foot property in a residential district that cannot be used for anything except to grow weeds and to house vermin. And that's what it is now. It probably isn't going to get any better from that unless somebody can actually make some use of this property. It's obviously zoned residential. The only use that could ever be made of it is a house. So in terms of the factors, there's obviously four factors. Scottsdale City Code talks about it. State law talks about it. Special circumstances. The trial court acknowledged that there were special circumstances, but said they were self-imposed. That's largely the argument of the City of Scottsdale as well. Self-imposed is actually the third criteria, so I'll get to it. But
no, counsel, if they were right that the condition does not flow from the prior zoning action, but instead flows essentially directly from the illegal subdivision, do you necessarily lose?
No, Your Honor. I think state law doesn't. I mean, Scottsdale City Code has a land division ordinance, but I don't think that means that we automatically lose. I mean, you know, you saw the City of Scottsdale. Well, what they said in their brief is that these five parcels have the remnant parcels have an undivided right to a house. So just reassemble the five parcels. Well, we're not a governmental entity, so we can't just assemble land. That land is owned by private individuals. So I mean, the land division it's something that happened a long time ago. This whole thing started, of course, when ADOT condemned part of the property. It did support a house. One of the other things I'll note is that the City of Scottsdale is actually wrong, as I pointed out in my briefing, that there is a right to a house under its city code. Over the five, if you reassemble the five non-conforming parcels, because there was certainly a gap of longer than 6 months where there was no house there as the Loop 101 was built. So there is no right there for anyone under its city code. I think that's another reason why its city code, if you look at it, and I'll get to the self-imposed. In fact, maybe I'll move into the self-imposed now.
Counsel, I just have a question before you get into the specific criteria. Under the code provision setting out the five criterion, the language of that provision is permissive. So that suggests to me that even if all of those criteria are met, the board still has the decision, has a permissive decision whether to grant the variance. Can you tell me why that's not true?
Your Honor, I think if all four criteria are met, I think they have significant discretion in their determination, but I don't think they have discretion to say, well, you meet every single of these four categories, and maybe while I'm waiting, maybe while the City of Scottsdale speaks, I can take a look at the state law on that. But I think if that's the case, I think that would be arbitrary and capricious at a minimum. If you can meet all four criteria, I think the board does have significant discretion in terms of finding whether the criteria have been met, but it's not unlimited, which is why there's a role for the court. I did point out in my briefs how some requests for variances have been treated very, very leniently. I think I pointed out Red Mountain, it's an unreported case. Marijuana dispensary case is another classic example where you've got plenty of uses that could be made for the property, but the applicant wants to use it in a certain way, and the zoning codes have yielded in those situations. I mean, Red Mountain was, you know, they wanted a larger car wash, so they got a variance. So I think, and I know, the board adjustment has significant discretion, but I don't think it's unbridled, and I think that's why there's the role for this court is to determine whether they've been arbitrary and capricious, and certainly that's our position that they have. Now, in terms of this is actually the third criteria, but as long as we start talking about it self-imposed, the Scottsdale Zoning Code, and it talks about, and this has been a significant dispute, you know, these conditions existed long before Mr. Koo ever owned the property. And under Scottsdale Zoning Code, well, Section 3, the third criteria, says that the special circumstances applicable to the property were not self-imposed or created by the property owner. Well, who's the property owner? Thankfully, we have a very helpful definition right in the Scottsdale Zoning Code also. It's Section 3.100. Property owner is the person holding fee simple title to real property as shown on the records of the Maricopa County Assessor's Office. The property owner is Hoon Koo.
Council, what do you do with this language in Pond First that a purchaser of property acquires no greater right to a variance than his predecessor? And this sort of goes to the point I was trying to get toward in my initial question to you, which is, if the 101 eminent domain didn't create the problem, but the illegal split created the problem, then wouldn't it be true that you have the same set of rights as all your predecessor owners since the illegal split? And isn't that a problem?
Well, Your Honor, I think the first answer to that is I think that language in Pond First is dicta, because they did grant the variance in that case. I think my recollection is it's a parenthetical reference, maybe a string reference even, but I think they did ultimately grant the variance in Pond First, and one of the things they said, they distinguished prior law on the issue of special circumstances, and they said, well, you know, those other cases stood for something, but here, the special circumstances are beyond the owner's control. That's a direct quote from Pond First, and I think clearly in this instance, this is beyond the owner's control. I mean,
On the who is the owner question under this subsection 3, I guess I wonder why we wouldn't tie together the language, so the plain text right there in that provision. We're talking about certain special circumstances. Why wouldn't we be looking to the property owner, who was the property owner at the time the special circumstances came to be? So if the special circumstances flow from the illegal subdivision, we would look at, was that imposed by the property owner at the time of that special circumstance?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's two reasons you shouldn't look at it that way, and one is that the City of Scottsdale has chosen to adopt a definition of property owner that basically says the property owner is Hoon Koo, and they've
done... Well, no, that definition, if we're looking at that definition of that term, but in the context of the plain text of this provision, we would look at the fee simple owner at the time the special circumstances came into being. So that's consistent with that definition, but tell me your second reason.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree because it says property owner is the person holding fee simple title. That's present tense, excuse me. So, You know, the other reason is we take property as it is now. I mean, Pond First said, you know, we look at the circumstances applicable to the property, not the property owner. I mean, look, here's the bottom line here is Pond First also said, and this is one of the reasons they granted the variance, is they said that, you know, this is... We don't really want to get into restraints on alienation, because if somebody take, and I know that the facts weren't exactly, the facts are true here, but there are additional facts, so we're not on all fours, but this is, in terms of this point, we are, and that they talked about alienability. And I mean, you talk about a property that you could never sell, never do anything with, other than grow weeds and provide a house for vermin, this is it. I mean, nobody conceivably is going to buy this property if you can't put a house there. And this is also in the record, the city of Scottsdale turned down a rezoning also. So you can't rezone it.
This state of being is the same state of being as to the predecessor property owner who attempted to get a variance and did not get one. He found a buyer. Perhaps Mr. Koo should have been warned by that lack of variance, but... That is the same state of being, and he was able to purchase the property under those circumstances, which means there might be another buyer. I mean,
yes, Your Honor, there's probably a buyer for land. Someone might speculate that they might have better luck, but the court in Pond First didn't just talk about that there's no alienability. They talked about that this is a restraint on alienability. I mean, American law clearly favors strong rights to alienate land. It favors property rights. Well, that's what the Pond First case said. We don't like restraints on alienation. This clearly affects a restraint on alienation, because your pool of potential buyers is much diminished when you've got a piece of property that can't be used for anything. And I also
it's paradoxical to say that something is actually a restraint on alienation. It doesn't just mean what I have is hard to sell, but a restraint on alienation is categorically different. It's a difference of, how should we say, kind and not degree and concept. And so it is paradoxical, isn't it, to say there's a restraint on alienation because nobody will buy what I bought knowing what I knew. I mean, that's...
Well, Your Honor, I mean, however we want to characterize it, I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult to sell, not impossible, right? Hoon Koo bought it. Very difficult to sell a piece of property that's 15,700 square feet right next to the Loop 101, mind you, that cannot be used for anything except effectively open space.
I want to talk just for a minute about the fourth criteria, the materially detrimental to persons residing or working in the vicinity. I believe there was testimony at the hearing from neighbors to that effect. Am I correct that the record contains testimony on this point?
Yes, but we also have the Murphy v. Town of Chino Valley that says it has to be credible evidence. And I mean, the notion that this weed patch, that actually putting a new build house on it is going to be materially detrimental. I mean, I think I called it a suspension of disbelief, but I mean, that's just that. I mean, I don't know how anybody could reasonably claim that, but there were neighbors who showed up and actually, I mean, there are people will say a lot of different things. But I think in terms of believability, credibility, that merits about a zero, because I think objectively...
But isn't our place to make a credibility determination at this...
I think under Murphy v. Chino Valley, it says credible evidence. This is just testimony from neighbors. This is evidence. It has to be credible. I mean, you could say the earth is flat.
Chino Valley say that we're the ones to determine whether it's credible evidence?
Your Honor, I think that the board does have, I mean, it is abuse of discretion, which is why we...
Does Chino Valley say that we're the ones who determine whether it's credible?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. That's your reviewing, in your reviewing capacity. You have to determine whether there was credible evidence. Now, the board has, you know, it's an abuse of discretion standard as to their determination that there was credible evidence. I mean, board doesn't really so much make a determination on the individual factors. The trial court did point that out in its minute entry. But one other thing I would say is that I think I quoted the Cardin Oil case in my briefs also about you know, zoning restrictions, and the interpretation the city of Scottsdale wants to give basically takes any value away from this property, because there's no purpose to which it might be reasonably used. I mean, this is a residentially zoned property in a sea of residentially zoned, sea of residences. And the only thing that could ever be done with this property is put a residence there under the zoning code. You can't do anything else. You can't open up a gas station. You can't have any commerce. You can build a house there. So if you can't build a house there, you've got zip. You've got, which is why it is what it is now. And this is in the record, it's squirrels and weeds.
It's an unfortunate situation, for sure. But what you just said is kind of like the archetypal argument that proves too much, that anybody who buys a parcel like this would automatically be entitled to a variance based on the premise of what you just said. It is a bad situation, but how do you respond to that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the way I would respond to that is, I think we have to take each case on the facts that are before them. This is a 15,700 square foot property, and you know, if you've got somebody who's coming forward with a 4,000 square foot property, what the trial court said is, well, they'd have a significant concern about an undersized lot. That would actually be true, and that would, you could say, the fourth factor wasn't met, for example. I mean, the other thing is yeah, I mean, you know, that there is a prove too much hypothetical, but we don't have any evidence in the record that Hoon Koo had anything to do. There's no privity. There's no nothing. So I think when that case, I think that's just an entirely different case, Your Honor.
So I pulled up Chino Valley. Here's what it says. It says, we will not set aside these findings unless clearly erroneous, and we must give due weight to the trial judge's opportunity to assess the credibility of witnesses. I don't think it says it's us in the first instance, and there's no burden that has to be overcome. Do you have any other authority that says we can, that's not clear error that is required?
Your Honor, I think at another point, what Chino Valley says is there must be credible evidence to support the variance. I'll look it up when I'm on break, but I think clearly that is the role of this court, is in review of, is there credible evidence? Yeah, there's a lot of deference that's paid to these Board of Adjustments. That's why you have cases like Red Mountain, but it's not unlimited. So with that, I'd like to save remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Please, the court, Your Honor, Eric Anderson on behalf of the City of Scottsdale Board of Adjustment, who I think is the technical defendant. All the listed defendants, that's who we're here on behalf of today. A few things. I almost wanted to read the trial court minute entry as part of my argument, make it easy, because the trial court really did a good job, really set forth, looked through the record, made the findings, and all of those findings are right on square and on point with the case law. But just so it looks like I did my job, I'm going to point out a few things. So number one, this idea that the city wouldn't recognize the eight, I'll call it the ADOT remnant, the five pieces in there. We've never said that it's expressly written out in the zoning code that this would be recognized, but you know, we have attorneys, we have legal obligations, we can read the case law, we can read Pawn First, and what the city representative who presented the case said specifically is the city would have recognized that this, the ADOT parcel, the remnant, the five pieces together, would have been a legal nonconforming use, and that's, it's not before the court today because that's not the case you're looking at. We aren't here. Mr. Koo doesn't own those five parcels. He owns one of those five parcels.
Is that representation in any way binding on the city? Or is it?
I'm sure.
That's a point.
Judge Perkins, I will confess that I have not researched that. If I'm involved as a representative of the city, I know that's been discussed and we agreed, and it's not part of the record, but that I think Mr. Lasota alluded to the idea that Mr. Koo could buy all the rest of the pieces and put it back together, then there would be a right.
I think it's legally... Lasota disagrees that it would be a legal nonconforming use because of the six-month thing. And so that's what I'm trying to get at is... Is your position that, well, that notwithstanding, the city has made representations
the city
on the
has
record
made.
That they'd be bound by kind of thing, or is it just, this is what we're saying now, we'll see what happens.
The city's representative, and I think it starts a discussion on the transcript of the Board of Adjustment proceedings, roughly page 7, line 12 in that area. He presents the history. He does note that the city... that it would have been considered that. He doesn't go into an extensive analysis of how that would fit under the zoning code, but as this court's probably aware, the zoning, the city's zoning powers flow from the state. That's, this court has said that in the past, and that's understood generally in practice that the city's zoning powers flow from the state. And we have a state law that says this, and as interpreted by our Supreme Court in the Pond First case, when the problem is created by governmental action, that is a different story than when it's created by...
Mr. Anderson, yes. How would you respond to the argument that the property, purchaser of property acquires no greater right is dicta in Pond First?
I think, first, there's two forms of dicta. There's dicta that is, I think the term is bitter dicta, and I apologize if I butchered the Latin on that, where it's just random statements from a court that aren't really pertinent to the issues before the case. Then there's statements that are pertinent to the issues. In Pond First is almost a mirror image of this case. In Pond First, the Phoenix Board of Adjustment in that case had granted a variance, and it was a competitor that was challenging. So, and in that case, the government, the record in Pond First, as conveyed in the decision, is this, that the infirmities, if you will, of the property in that case were created through governmental condemnation, which is essentially what you have in this situation. I'm not confident if it was ADOT was a condemnation or just a purchase. It's clear in the record that it was as a part of the 101 freeway project. They acquired 2-acre parcel, used what they needed, and they sold that back off as one remnant, which was then purchased. So then it was split into five. So in this case, and this court discussed it, I think it was Judge Perkins, I apologize, if it was you, Judge Jacobs, pointed out that that's really the crux of the issue, is the infirmity is created by the private property owner doing an illegal subdivision of property. State has also, along with zoning powers, has given the city's authority to regulate subdivision. One of the reasons that that is there is so that cities can approve a subdivision to make sure that these kinds of lots are not created by somebody that are not conforming to a zoning code and therefore result in the situation. It's unfortunate, but we have a layered system in between the city and the state. We have the county recorder's office, which is not a is merely a recording or depository. So in this situation, you have a scenario where someone can go to their own private land surveyor, whatever, draw up legal descriptions, go to the county recorder's office and say, here's how I'm selling off this property into five parcels. That's outside the city's control. There's really no checks and balances on that. But what is clear and undisputed in this case is that that subdivision did not conform to the city's subdivision requirements at the time. So,
can you respond to his argument about the distinction he contends exists between the property owner and a property owner for purposes of disaggregating Mr. Koo from his upstream people who did the illegal subdivision?
To borrow a football term, Your Honor, I think that's a Hail Mary. Because if you look at, as I noted, what I pointed out at the beginning is the city's zoning powers flow from the state. So if we look at 9462.06, the variance is actually a creature of state law. The fact that the city has imported it into its zoning code doesn't change the fact that 969-462.06 sets forth the Board of Adjustment and sets forth the criteria. If you look at that, and that's the same statute that the Pond First Court was reviewing, specifically refers to the property owner as well. And that's the same language that the Pawn First Court pointed out, be it dicta or otherwise, that the property owner, it goes with the property. And that's just a basic tenet of property law that's existed for centuries, that you have things that are personal to people and then there are things that are appurtenant or carry with the property. What the Pawn First Court said is that good or bad, the circumstances favoring or disfavoring a variance go with the property, not the property owner. So there's really no distinction to be had there, and that's why I think it's really just a reach, because Pawn First was decided based on the state law, the city's code, property owner is the same thing like that. And the Pawn First case, and it's not only dated, but we cited the court a couple of treatises that this is the prevailing law. I believe there was a treatise that the Pawn First Court relied on as part of its decision where it said this is just the basic law of variances. So did that answer your question?
Yes, counsel, thank you.
Okay, so I wanted to also just briefly talk about abuse of discretion, because I think that shouldn't be lost, and that's why I think Pawn First is also, it's a mirror image, because in Pawn First, as I pointed out, there the city's Board of Adjustment granted a variance, and then their granting of a variance was being challenged. As Judge Weinzweig pointed out, the Board of Adjustment is the primary, the court of first resort in this, and I'll know they're a quasi-judicial body. They're the court that makes those decisions. Credible evidence doesn't mean, as I think was alluded to up here, doesn't mean that you substitute your judgment for the Board of Adjustment. It just means that you look at the record, and if there was evidence in the record to support the decision, then you uphold the board as not abusing its discretion. I think the appellant in this case is trying to push that a little too far and ask you to decide what was credible and what was not. That's not how this court functions in its reviewing capacity. This court looks at the record, and if there is evidence, unless it's so far-fetched that it couldn't possibly be believed for something.
But isn't that his argument, that it is that far-fetched to say the neighbors would be more troubled by a newly built house versus a empty lot collecting weeds and vermin?
Well, there's Judge Perkins, that's a good question, but if the record, those neighbors came in, and there's no controversy. Yes, you could disagree. Reasonable minds could disagree. The neighbors felt that it would not be served by having a house there. There's other factors. The other thing, one of the board members that specifically addressed that, part of the record is that Mr. Koo had gone to the city council, asked for a rezoning shortly before the Board of Adjustment case. And in that case, the legislative body that's in charge of deciding whether or not a property should be rezoned found that the factors, it wasn't in the best interest of the city to have a rezoning of that property. That rezoning would have, if granted, which was denied by the city council and not before this court today, but if granted, that would have allowed Mr. Koo to build the property he wanted to. But the city council, the body charged with making those decisions, determined that it wasn't appropriate. So to come in and say that all that evidence is not credible is beyond the function of this court. You're substituting your judgment. But I will clarify that, because I don't think that matters to the issue of the self-imposed circumstances. That's number four. I will acknowledge that not all the board members addressed that issue in their decision. The primary issue that is before this court and was the main focus of the Board of Adjustment was the self-imposed circumstances. So I just have one more quick note I will make with the Pawn First case. In that case, the government took the property. In the ADOT parcel, the government took the property. So in our function as a city, we would recognize that as that. And we'll we're happy to have it as part of the record here today in this court, that if the circumstances arose that the five parcels that were spun off, I'll call it, from the ADOT remnant were reassembled, the city would recognize that as a legal nonconforming, and there would be entitlement to a structure, a residence based on that whole property. Problem is that you can't divide a residence into fifths. You can't. There's five different parcels, and one of the things that's dangerous about the argument that Mr. Koo advances is he's suggesting that he's entitled as a matter of law to take this one remnant parcel and have the zoning conform to what was the result of an illegal subdivision. That same argument, if adopted by this court, would apply to all five of those parcels. So it wouldn't be a scenario where we have one house. We would have five houses on clearly, which is well beyond what was intended or consistent with the neighborhood. So
there was in the map, the plat map that we got, there is a parcel that is about the same size or in the same neighborhood on which there is a residence. Is it like right next to this remnant parcel? I recognize that's not part of the remnant parcel, but could you talk to me about that? What
Judge,
do we do with that?
It is. I will explain it as best I can to stay within the record because it's not clear. The parcels, there's the ADOT parcel was at the end of a cul-de-sac. It kind of encompassed that cul-de-sac before it was split into the five remnant parcels that we have. In addition, in the meantime, the area to the west would be the west of the subject parcels. Was rezoned to a zoning which is R1-18, which is Scottsdale zoning speak for R1 is single family residential, 18 is 18,000 minimum lots. There's a quirk to that zoning category that allows an overall zoning. So what the reason those parcels can be somewhat smaller than 18,000 feet is because there's common area space that is credited to each parcel because that's left is open space. So that's
it's both a different type of residential zoning and there are these factual.
Correct. It's an entirely different residential zoning. That area immediately west of the subject parcels was rezoned to R1-18. The subject parcels were not included in that rezoning. They retained the legacy zoning, which is R1-35.
And understanding it's not in the record, if I understand what you said, this other house, which I think is like 14,000 square foot lot or so, it is on an R1-18, but it is proper without a variance to build on some R1-18s where there is the common area present as is present in this area. Without saying the background that's not in the record, that would in concept be that could occur without a variance, right?
That is correct because there's a zoning, it's in the zoning code, which the court could take public notice of with these zoning classes. There's allowable to create open space that's common to a group of lots, and then
it's attributable to the lots that are otherwise
correct.
Under the
okay.
number, and that in concept could have happened here potentially.
Correct. So one of the quirks, though, the parcel that Mr. Koo refers to is actually two separate. One of the things that he acquired in relying on creating street access, the parcel, the ADOT remnant that he bought didn't even have street access. He purchased a remnant little pie-shaped wedge that was a result of the HOA that is part of that property to the west. The HOA didn't sold those off. That's a whole other issue under the legal circumstances. But so he's taking an ADOT remnant, a little pie-shaped, and that's how he's getting his parcel, none of which were legally constituted under the city's code. So. I don't have any further, unless there's further questions to the court, I will waive the balance of my time. So.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lasota.
Thank you. On the point about the Scottsdale would have recognized a remaining use, that's contrary to its code. because it would not have been a lawful nonconforming use. Section 1.1303 says that clearly. In terms of, so there would have been no use. I know it's not the most important point, but it's, they're just simply inaccurate.
Are you saying there's no point at which it could have been recognized that way by Scottsdale?
No, it could have been, but once a house disappeared there for 6 months, there was no use, which it clearly did. Murphy v. Chino Valley said, we find sufficient credible evidence to support the board decision. Quote, they also said, if there is credible evidence to support the board's decision, we must affirm. The credible evidence, there's some point at which what someone says is simply not credible. Some people will swear to you that the earth is flat, but that's not credible.
Isn't a difference of opinion?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's, no, I mean, I think it's that this is not credible evidence when somebody says, let's take this weed patch and put a house on this, and this is going to be materially detrimental to my value. I mean, I think any realtor would tell you that that's objectively false. I think there is a role for this court in determining whether that is credible evidence. I mean, that's just not believable.
It's not credible to not want to have a house next to your lot?
Your Honor, I think that, that the testimony was actually that it would be an undersized lot, and it wouldn't be. I mean, this is, and that sort of gets into the question of some of these other lots. There are lots that are less than 15,000 feet on Sharon, the street to the north. The house next door is 16,281 feet, and yet we're 15,700 feet. I mean, I know there's a complicated explanation for why everybody else can do this, but I mean, that's the definition of arbitrary and capricious.
Everybody else can do this doesn't really seem like a fair comment, because those are R1 to 18s, and it seems like they didn't need a variance at all. So how is it that it's doing the same thing?
Well, they should need a variance, because they're not even 18,000 square feet. So I don't really understand the city's explanation on that. They're less than 15,000. But also, we try to rezone. That's also in the record. Mm-hmm. Well, you got left out of the R135. Well, everyone around us, excuse me, we got left out of the R118. Everybody around us is R118. And we tried to rezone, and they said no to that also. Dicta, one point on that, I think it's basically not necessary to the court's holding. That's what I've always thought of as dicta. And I think that's clearly the case here, because they granted the variance. And I think that one quote kind of goes against all the other principles upon first, which is, we want to protect alienability of property. And to that point, Pond First also said, this is a direct quote, Arizona law requires boards of adjustment to consider special circumstances applicable to the property, not the property owner. It's 242 AZ 555. I mean, I think that's a critical point in itself. And I think we have to look at the property that and not so much the property owner. Last point is on this, the definition of property owner. That's what they say in their code. Why can't their code be more lenient than state law? They are a charter city. That argument's never really come up. But their code defines property owner a certain way, and basically their attorney is telling you, well, don't listen to our code. It's basically contrary to state law. I don't think it is. I think the code controls in this circumstance. That's the way we've always proceeded in this case anyway. So I know I'm out of time.
Okay. But thank you, counsel, both of you, for your very helpful arguments. The court will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision in due course.
Thank you, Your Honor.